we're back in the US.
We are, and you've got a bit of a cold.
Yeah, colds still exist during COVID, apparently.
I know. It's been a while since you've had a cold.
Yeah. And also, I did have a PCR test, so I'm sure it's not COVID.
Yeah.
Though, that's sort of, that's a thing that you always, anytime you feel anything wrong with your body at the moment, you just think, oh God, it's COVID.
I know. Right? Get a bad headache and you're like, is it?
Yeah. Anyway, we're not going to talk about that on the podcast. yeah, we're back in the States after, well, I was in South Africa for a month. You were there for 2.5-3 weeks or so. And I think we're just going to spend this episode talking a little bit about, well, that month in South Africa and reflecting a bit on what our favorite moments were sighting-wise. I think this is going to be an episode that's just about sightings,
I know,
right?
Kind of taking it back to the basics of safari stories. I mean, we spent the last bit of our time in South Africa in the Kruger National Park, and we had some very memorable sightings. So I think we'll kind of jump right in. And we had one that kind of stands out, I think, particularly, which was of a very unique lion. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So I saw this dude twice, actually. It's a
you
male.
You saw him after we saw him?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
No, I saw him again. We spent 2 nights in the park with Snurse, Laura, and Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we were driving out of the park, and it had been a pretty quiet trip in the park.
Yeah.
I think that the park in general at the moment is still a bit quieter, and at the time that we were there, it was sort of the height of the fourth wave of COVID. So there was far less vehicle traffic, and I suppose less vehicle traffic naturally just means less sightings.
Well, less eyes looking.
Yeah, less eyes looking around. But anyway, we were close to that Sitara area, towards the Orpen side of the park.
Just for context, that's like a very central...
Yeah, it's a very central part of the park. And I suppose we were probably 45 minutes from leaving the park, or 45 minutes away from the gate. And we saw these lions to the right of us, on not in the road, but like maybe, what, 20, 30 meters off the road?
Probably 20.
And the funny thing is, we saw this male lion first, then we noticed some females, and then we noticed another male a bit further away. But only like later on, after looking at the photos, did we realize, oh shit, this lion is one of the kind of really famous white lions that occurs in the area. And there's not many white lions that occur in that area. There's this male that we saw, he's an adult, he's about 7 years old. And I had to verify that with somebody who works in the area. He's called the Shishangan white male lion, or I think he's locally also known as Casper.
Casper the ghost.
Yeah, Casper the ghost, which is a terrible name. I think it's a terrible name. But I've seen photos of him over the last couple of years on social media, and in the past he's looked poorly. And while he looked quite battle-scarred now, his condition was good.
Well, he was also enormously full.
Yeah.
Like, his stomach was... He'd obviously fed either the night before or even that morning, because his tummy was absolutely enormous. So I think that contributed a lot to how he looked kind of healthier than if you had seen him on an empty stomach with all of his scars. It would look a little bit more alarming.
I think you're right in saying that. It was quite a cloudy day as well, so his white color didn't really stand out as strongly, or the contrast wasn't as stark as it probably normally is, because last time I was in South Africa, I don't remember if I told you even, I saw a white lion as well.
Yeah.
And it was a different white lion. There's only three in the wild that I know of, in the Kruger Park anyway. And there's two youngsters in the same area, because those genes are dominant or recessive genes.
What is
rather.
A white lion? Let's just start there.
Oh, okay,
there
yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. But yeah, a white lion is a lion who has a recessive gene that causes this leucism or leucism, which is kind of where the skin pigments don't have the ability to form color. So it's not quite like albinism, or you know how people can be albinos, where there's literally no color in the entire body, or hair in the body, or even then the eyes are red. It's not like that. So the eyes have color, the mane also has a slight color, but the fur on the body is almost white. Very, very like light creamy beigey color, but much lighter than a normal lion.
Yeah.
That gene, only in the wild, as far as I know, again, only really occurs in that one area in the Kruger National Park, which is that Sitara and Timbavati area. And yeah, in the last few years, there's been several white lions born. On Ngala, actually, there was one born and that one didn't make it. And then now more recently on Ngala, I think 2 or 3 years ago, there were two white lions born into the same pride, and they're still alive. And one of those I saw the last time around. But this Shishangan male, this 7-year-old male that I'm talking about now, he was born on the kind of Singita Lebombo sites on the eastern part of the park. And now him and his brother obviously roam over a very large area.
I mean,
servicing the females.
Yeah, he's a big boy. I mean, his head is large, his paws are enormous. He's got all these scars, and he's a little bit kind of wiry looking. He doesn't have like the big broad shoulder. Yeah, he doesn't strike me as like a massive lion. That's not the impression I got. He's a little bit more on the like slinky side, where he's got, you know, kind of more bonier hips and shoulders,
maybe
big tummy. But
well, I think he's, I don't know, I think that he's in very good shape.
No, for
overall.
Sure. I mean, he's a mature male lion.
Yeah.
He's impressive.
Yeah.
But
he's got
maybe
a lot of...
it's the scars also that just like give you the impression a little bit that he's like...
Yeah. It could be the scars.
I don't know, more run down.
From that sighting anyway, it seemed like he was very much holding his own with the females, because his brother, who's not a white lion, just a bog standard normal lion, he, of which there are also not many of, but... he was sitting maybe, what, like 80 meters away or so?
Yeah.
And you could see that the female that was with the Shishangan white male was, like, pretty much presenting to him.
Yeah,
and he seemed knackered. Like,
he was not into it.
No, he wasn't into it. I think he was either too full or too spent to...
She wanted to mate, and
yeah,
he wasn't...
Exactly.
He wasn't into it.
He wasn't into it. I'm sure he had done plenty of mating in the past...
Yeah.
In the past few days. But that was quite a cool sighting, because it was the middle of the day, but because it was overcast, they weren't entirely inactive.
Yeah.
We got a nice video of the white male kind of standing up.
Yeah, so I was
going
to say that we were quite lucky in that regard. When we got there, they were all flat, and we could just see the male had his head up, and so that's how we could see them. And then we realized, oh, there's a female there, there's a female there, there's a female there. And it was actually only when his brother got up, who was probably, like, I don't know.
Yeah, like 80 meters away.
Kind of further down the road. It was only once he got up and started walking towards us that we realized also the color contrast. And that was when we kind of started chatting, like, well, now that we're looking at, like, him next to a normal colored lion, like, he really does look a lot paler.
Yeah, I think you called it, and I think Mike called it as well. I didn't think it was a white lion, just because he didn't look as white as the other white lion that I'd seen.
Right, and it's also like he was with the females who, without the like normal mane contrast, just are much lighter than a male lion. And so with those three females around him, two or three females around him, he blended in quite normally.
Yeah.
So it was more, I think if we had seen him next to his brother also, it would have been like, oh wow.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Okay, so you were only in the park for that one little trip, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's hard. Now, like, thinking, we moved around so much that trip, it's
sure.
hard to remember where we were.
But what was your, like, what stands out from that little trip in the park for you?
From that one, we were camping at Pretoria Skop.
Yeah.
Which is a campsite in the Kruger National Park. And we went out for an afternoon kind of game drive bumble, just kind of planning to stay within the area. It was a beautiful sunset, so we wanted to go out and kind of see that and see what we saw. And we had gone to a few of the water holes and seen some game there. But overall, it was kind of quiet. And so we were making our way back towards camp. And we saw a troop of probably almost 40, 45 baboons.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
We stopped because they're always kind of fun to see what they're getting up to. And
always busy, right?
Yeah, always doing something. Like, there's always something new you can see baboons doing.
Yeah.
So we watched as this troop was coming towards us, and we heard a baboon shout a lot. Like, they seemingly scream and shout over kind of nothing, or just whenever they're displeased with something.
Yeah, well, it's like if you're together with your extended family at Thanksgiving, like, there's going to be quite a bit of noise.
Yeah. So we heard this like baboon infant shrieking, and so we looked kind of to our left, and there was a baboon who had an infant on its belly, which is quite often how females will carry their infants when they're quite young. They carry them on their belly, and then when they get a little bit older and they can ride, call it like riding jockey, then they ride on their back like a jockey on a horse. So this infant was still quite little, so he or she was still on the adult's tummy. But the adult was kind of dragging it. So it was kind of falling off the belly, and it was kind of holding it by one arm and kind of trying, like seemingly trying to kind of carry it down the road, but not doing so very successfully. And we were like, geez, that's a bit odd. And then the baboon sat down, and we realized it was actually a male baboon that had this infant kind of half on its tummy, half kind of holding it by its arm. And it was only when a female walked behind it that you can really, and I think I have a photo of this actually, so we'll share it, but you can see the size difference between a female and this male.
Yeah, I mean, a male probably weighs 1.5 to 2 times as much as a female, an adult anyway.
It was also just like the muzzle size, the size of the head and the muzzle is so drastically different. And so this male then sat down and put the infant on his chest, and the infant was kind of looking around, and it was quite cool to see him kind of take a moment, regroup, get this infant comfortable again. It was quite just cool to see, because typically in baboons, the females will carry the infants around and do most of the parenting. But it's not unheard of that a male baboon would carry an infant, but it was just quite cool to see, and a little bit funny, honestly, that it's like this male, like, kind of dragging this little infant along the road, who's shrieking its displeasure, and then he's like, oh, okay, fine, and then sits down and kind of calms it down, and then the little one wriggled and tried to get away and managed to get away, and they just kept walking down the road.
Yeah, like, to see the compassionate side of the paternal behavior,
it was very sweet.
Is definitely not normal, right?
No.
I mean, I've seen situations similar to that, but I don't think I've seen the compassionate side, so that's really nice.
Yeah, it was just interesting to see, and I'm now just thinking, then we went back to camp, and then the antics with the monkeys began.
Oh yeah, we had a few more, maybe less pleasant encounters with primates as well.
Yeah. We had a fantastic camping location at this campsite, but
Pretoria Scup was also empty, which is not something necessarily that I've seen in the past. The campsite was completely empty, and we chose arguably the worst location to camp.
Well, we got there and we were like, wow, this is such a perfect camping spot. Why is this still open? And then we learned. So we were camped under these two beautiful, were they jack, what kind of trees, do you remember? Two beautiful,
I think a jackalberry,
trees,
maybe
jackalberry or something else. And we would wake up in the morning early enough, kind of just before sunrise or as the sun's rising, and so would the monkeys that were roosting in the trees above our tents. And first thing in the morning, what do the monkeys do to start their day? They pee and defecate.
Yeah.
And so we're making our morning coffee, and sure enough, on our kind of like aluminum table, you just hear like beep 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 beep, and look
up. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I had a monkey shit on me at 6 a.m. while I was sipping my coffee, and that kind of like, on the one hand, it didn't ruin my day, but it wasn't a great start to the day. But on the other hand, having spent the last like year in COVID cities, I was like, this is pretty cool. Yeah. Also,
it was like well, I must say, it was amusing when it happened to you, when then one of them peed on my down jacket as I was holding my coffee, and I was like, did it get in my coffee? Did it not get in my coffee? Like, this is not cool. Like, I would really like to have my coffee.
Yeah. But those
it was very funny.
Baboons, those monkeys, they're vervet monkeys. They're a real pest. I really hope that camp is able to kind of control that better, because it's kind of, you know, it happened to our neighbors as well at the campsite that
you have to be very vigilant there. Yeah. It's a little bit frustrating.
Right. And when you're camping, you want to be able to relax as well. You don't need to, you don't want to be having to think about what's this monkey going to do the whole day.
And it, literally, if you turn your back, if you leave your tent a fraction open, like Hein had the window of his car was probably open like 6-7 inches. And while Hein is standing next to the car, this monkey squeezes in the top of the window, grabs an orange from the back, puts it in his mouth, uses all hands and legs to climb back out the window, and then sits above his car eating this. I think it was a grapefruit, actually.
Yeah, it was.
Eating this grapefruit in the tree. And the kind of amusing part is that this monkey took like two or three bites, realized it was a grapefruit, and just threw it on the ground and was like, that is not an orange. I do not want that. That's sour.
A little bit too bitter.
It was so cheeky.
Well, those monkeys were definitely nice and fat. I don't think they could pick and choose what they wanted
to
eat. I don't think
good thieves.
Yeah, exactly.
But we did have some also fantastic sightings. You especially, I feel like, on your... So I then left the park, or I left South Africa, and Jomi went back in and spent some more time in the park, and you had a very good day, I would say, sighting, but day or morning.
Yeah, right. Well, I first wanted to just chat about the... Because I saw the white lion again, very close to where I'd seen him previously, and it was just nice to see, just because it was maybe 6 or 7 days later, like let's say a week later, in a very similar location with the same members of sort of the same pride members. Like, his brother was there and then a couple of females were there, but mating season was definitely over, and him and his brother were big chums again, and they were like lying next to each other and kind of like rubbing their heads against each other and being very affectionate with one another. And that was just nice to see. And I always love that. You know, I mention that sometimes on the podcast, when you get a bit of insight as to what's going on with the lion dynamics. So that was great. And but then that was on the way down to see Hein, and then I left Hein in White River, and the last episode of the podcast I recorded was in the evening at Skukuza.
After your last day.
Right. The next day I was leaving the park. The next morning I was leaving the park. And I'm going to say overall the Kruger Park had been a little bit quiet sighting-wise, because sometimes you come to expect these ridiculous mornings. And that very last morning I had an absolutely insane morning.
You had a humdinger of a drive out of the park.
Absolutely. A humdinger is right. And it was very much filled by lions and male lions. I think male lions is probably the theme of this podcast.
Mm.
But I left Skukuza when the gates open. And the gates open, it was the very beginning of August. So
they open at sunrise.
The gates open just before sunrise, actually. I was driving down the road. It was still dark, maybe 20 minutes after the gates opened.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of me, I see this lion, again, a male lion, walking down the road, strutting down the road.
So fun.
Really,
I mean, just the
really
best.
Cool. Yeah, so fun.
So fun.
And then ahead of him, I see another male lion, maybe his brother, but certainly he looked very similar. And they were just both strutting down the road, and I was able to drive alongside them, so they were like, I'm gonna say, a meter and a half, like a COVID safe distance to my right.
Oh my god, is that gonna become a like form of measurement now?
I hope
a COVID
not.
Distance away.
So I was able to sort of get videos and photos of them as I was driving, like out the window, and the head of the male lion is kind of the same height as I was in the car, the height
crazy,
of the window,
yeah.
Let's say. And I was able to pull ahead of them and get videos and shots of them coming towards me. And then the sun also rose as they were walking, and they were walking directly into the sun. So I've got one or two nice shots of them like walking directly into the sun as it's rising. But they were
crazy.
Massive, massive males. And in that Skukuza area along the Sabi River, that's got to be some of the densest lion population
that
you
sure.
find anywhere in the park, and probably anywhere in Africa, to be fair. So you know that two males like this in their prime, sort of 7 or 8 years old, you know that they're going to be, they've got a lot of competition.
Yeah.
And you could tell as well, one of the lions had a bit of a limp, but they were so relaxed around the vehicles, so just sure of themselves,
yeah.
just strutting down the road.
You gotta project confidence in an area like that as a lion.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I followed them for about half an hour. Again, I was just by myself. I was so lucky in that there was only maybe another two cars there, which is just, I mean, in that Skukuza area, almost unheard of.
Yeah.
But I left them to it after a little bit of time. I got the most amazing footage, and I thought, if this is anything, if this is all that I see in 1 month in South Africa, I'm happy.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. But it wasn't the only thing, because I kept driving, and I had quite a bit of distance to cover that day. So I had to get up north to that Sitara area and then leave outside of Orpengate. So it's a bit of a drive, and my flight was that same day.
You need to make it out at a certain time.
So I'd put a lot on my plate, and you know, you calculate the kilometers and how fast you're allowed to drive and stuff. So it was a bit quiet for another hour or two, and then I got to a waterhole a bit north of that Chukwan area. So that's a bit further north than Skukuza. And at this waterhole, these waterholes normally are pumping with game, but the waterhole was fairly quiet. There was no real mammal life around. But just as I pull up to it, out of the bush, this lioness starts walking down towards the water. And I think, great, there's a lioness here. There's no other vehicles. She's going to come down for a drink. This is going to be amazing. She walked straight past the waterhole without going for a drink. And I thought, okay, that's a bit strange. And then she passed behind my vehicle and came onto the road. And she was a little bit jumpy as she got onto the road. And she started trotting. And I thought, maybe she's skittish of my vehicle. But then I thought, why did she walk so close to the vehicle and then become skittish? So anyway, I turned my vehicle around and I started following her down the road, and she was trotting at like quite a brisk trot, like you'd see a horse or, you know, a dog. A dog would do that as well, or a lion, obviously. And so I thought, I'm not going to follow her too much. Maybe I am pestering her and she's trotting for a reason.
Yeah, she's whether clearly or not,
yeah, whether
agitated or trying to get away from something.
Exactly. Whether or not the reason is me and my car doesn't really matter. She's agitated and I should just leave her be.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of turned around and went back towards the waterhole. And just as I got to the waterhole, in the distance on the far side of the waterhole, I see another lion, this time a male, approaching. And immediately becomes clear to me, because this male is also moving, walking very, very fast. So like really walking at a brisk, brisk pace. I think, okay, well, this female is definitely just moving away from this male. And earlier in the episode now, we just mentioned how sometimes the males don't want to mate with the females, but the reverse of that
is
far more common.
Yeah.
As it is with humans, it is with lions. So the female was just trying to get away from the male, and that became even more clear when I saw a second male lion on the far side of the waterhole, walking through this kind of bushy section and then coming out close to the water, walking up also behind my car. And it was really cool because they were kind of gently calling to each other, but also probably trying to contact call to that lioness to kind of tell her to come back. But she changed direction when she hit the road, in that she went kind of 90 degrees to the left. So she changed cardinal direction. Instead of heading, I suppose she was initially heading west, she started heading south. The male lions got onto the road. They must have like lost her scent or didn't really know where she was, and they carried on going west across the road and out of sight. But this whole sighting lasted maybe 10, 15 minutes or so. And that whole time on that central tar road in Kruger, no other vehicles, which is just phenomenal. Like, it's just incredible that didn't happen. And there I really, again, I just thought I got such insight as to what's going on here in this lion pride. I'd love to know more.
Yeah, I wonder also if she didn't use the tar road strategically as a way to kind of lose those males.
Yeah, you're probably right. You know, I always think how much of this behavior is learned, but certainly the lions in Kruger have shown signs of understanding that the tar can benefit them.
Right.
So they sometimes chase larger hoofed animals onto the tar, and then that tar is quite slippy for like a buffalo or a giraffe to run quickly.
It's definitely possible that they've learned that like scent is harder to pick up on the tar road than it is on the soil or something.
Yeah, I would say that's very possible. They also are able to move quite silently on the tar road. So just very interesting behavior. So then that for me was brilliant, because it was a sighting I had completely to myself. I was then really late. I really needed to go. So I was kind of driving at the speed limit to get out of the park. And close to that area, really close to where I'd seen the white lion a couple of days previously, on the way down to White River, I saw a vehicle kind of parked on the side of the road up ahead of me. And I thought, all right, well, we're close to the gate here. Maybe it's just somebody who's having a look at some antelope or something.
Because they've just come in and like, antelope are still really exciting.
Exactly. I mean, antelope are always, exciting. But
you don't always stop for them.
When you're trying to make your flight, you're not going to necessarily stop for them. Right. So as I kind of get closer, I see a cheetah running across the road from right to left. I think, geez, what, like, how insane is my luck today? Like, I've had these two incredible lion sightings. The last thing I was expecting to see now was a cheetah. Cheetah are the rarest predators, rarest cats, let's say, in the Kruger National Park. There's only about 200 adult cheetah in the park, give or take. So to see any one cheetah is always very, very special. It was in a nice open area, so I could, you know, I thought, I'm going to have a nice view of this guy now. I thought it was a young male, maybe. And the cheetah kind of sat, not on the side of the road, but 10 or 15 meters off the road as I pulled up alongside it. And then as I pulled up alongside it, it took off and it ran at top speed, which, as we know, for a cheetah is insane. Like, they go 70 miles an hour at top speed. And I saw that it was chasing a steenbok, which is this really small antelope.
Very quick.
Yeah, really quick and agile. But it's like a 15-pound antelope. And they're almost as fast as cheetah. And if they have any sort of a distance between them and their predator that's trying to catch them, I think they'll usually get away. And in this case, the steenbok did manage to get away. So that was phenomenal. The cheetah then was still looking around, looked like he was going to hunt a bit more. But then eventually he actually walked a little distance off, further away from the road, sat down under a bush, because now it's the middle of the day and it's quite warm. And then I decided to carry on because I needed to make my flight. On the way out, one last thing. As I was kind of leaving the park, there's one big waterhole on the right hand side. I saw this massive herd of elephant come down for a drink, and I thought, this is like,
what's happening?
This is the perfect send off. And yeah, that was kind of the last. Yeah. That's my last memory from safari in the Kruger. I left the park. Within an hour, I was at the airport. Within 2 or 3 hours, I was on my plane.
Yeah.
And that was that. That was my last morning in South Africa and in Kruger. And
yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way. And there was something special about the fact that it was just me. It was just my own little morning
adventure.
Of safari and adventure there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that so many of your sightings were also just you, that you weren't with the normal amount of cars or other vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that's the beauty of traveling at the moment, is that a lot of places that you go, you have things like that to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool, guys. I think that's
all.
That's pretty much all that we've got time for this week. We have some exciting plans over the next couple of months, and maybe in one of the next few episodes we're gonna chat about that. Yeah.
Where we're going and what we're doing.
Where we're going and what we're doing, exactly. Well, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and see you again very soon.